Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
And I think they remember the mistake they made in 2020 to vote out this government through that judicial coup d'etat and demonstrations. People don't regret that.
Former Malawian President Mutharika expresses confidence in his electoral prospects ahead of next year's general election.
We're saying that black parties must unite and vote as one, because without a consolidated vote, we will never be able to achieve or to dismantle this imperialistic system that we have.
Former South African President Jacob Zuma calls for unity among leaders of black political parties.
These intelligence and security officials told him that he needed him to intervene to expose and put a stop to plans to harm me.
And Tanzania's main opposition leader Tundu Lissu expresses concern about his personal safety ahead of next year's general election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Malawi's former President Arthur Peter Mutharika says his Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, will work hard to wrestle power from the governing Malawi Congress Party, or MCP, in the next general election, scheduled for September 2025. His remark follows a recent Afrobarometer poll that showed dissatisfaction with the direction of the country. The findings show that 75% of respondents say the country is heading in the wrong direction. The survey was done in October, and people were asked how they would vote if the election were held the next day. 43% of respondents say they would vote for the DPP back in October when the survey was done. And 29% said they would have voted for the ruling MCP. 14% of the respondents were undecided. For more reaction to the Afrobarometer research, I reached former Malawian President Arthur Peter Mutharika.
No, my reaction is that's the reality. We expected this, obviously. So we are very pleased that it has been confirmed by this very credible polling group.
What do you think accounts for your sudden popularity? Because some people said you lost the last general election approximately 5 years now. Your party has become popular.
I think what accounts for this is the failures of the present government. I'm sure you have seen the newspapers and everywhere else. In every aspect of our society, whether it's economy, whether it's governance, social situation here, and I think people are remembering my government, and I think they remember the mistake they made in 2020 to vote out this government through that judicial coup d'etat and demonstrations. People now regret that. They realize they made a mistake and they are looking forward to our coming back next September.
Mr. President, looking at the polling, the DPP has approximately 43-44%, still short of the 50% plus one threshold needed to win the presidency according to the Malawian constitution. How sure that you'll be able to pull this off?
I think we'll be able to. This poll was done in August, and that was before the situation became so bad. The situation is so bad that the government, the country is almost bankrupt. We can't pay our bills. That's how bad the situation is. If this survey were done today, I believe that the MCP government would get less than 10% of the vote. So I'm very confident that we can secure 50 plus one next September.
But Mr. President, the government got a lot of approval from the Malawian respondents who said that access to clean water and health and infrastructure and education have been really positive, and they commend the government for doing so.
Yes, of course, they'll make some progress in those areas. But in all these areas, education, clean water, infrastructure, it's a continuation of what we started. Each one of them, it's a continuation of what I started before I left the government. So, yes, I'm glad that I've decided to continue the programs that we started. I think it's commendable that they are able at least to complete them effectively, some of them, in road infrastructure. But I think that there has been some progress in those sectors that you have mentioned.
Well, Mr. President, the question is, a lot of Malawians previously said your government did not fight corruption enough. They are saying the same thing about the current administration. What will you do differently in the fight against corruption to win it, as demanded by Malawians?
I'm saying that we'll make sure that the Anti-Corruption Bureau is properly funded, well-resourced, and given independence. Actually, compared with what has happened now, the government even arrested the Director General of the Anti-Corruption Bureau. I'm sure you are aware of that. And all the cases she was handling, I think 40 of them that will be cancelled by the government. So the fight against corruption by this government is zero. Now, we'll continue where we started, and we'll make sure that these egregious cases that are happening now, that they will be addressed by the new government.
Mr. President, the question is your party considering, or are you considering an alliance? Because I understand the MCP is also working with other opposition parties to show up its support ahead of the elections.
Yeah, that's correct. I think we will certainly consider that. At the moment, we feel we can move on our own. We can get future plus 1%. But, politics is dynamic, as you know, Peter. And I'm sure next 9 months, as we move along toward the election, I will consider, if necessary, some kind of alliances with some of the parties. I'm sure it's something that's not off the table. So we'll consider that as we go along.
Overall, what is your major takeaway following the latest Afrobarometer poll about the current situation on the ground in Malawi?
Well, we are encouraged by that, and we're going to work extremely hard to try to convince the 14% that is undecided to get him to our side. But we're encouraged by the polls, and our people are energized now. We're having more rallies, and so we'll certainly take advantage of that. But work hard, doubly hard, to make sure that you can get 50+1 on our own.
Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika is a former Malawian president. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. In South Africa, former President Jacob Zuma is calling for unity among all leaders of the country's black political parties. This, he said, is part of the efforts to gain a 2/3 parliamentary majority with an aim to reclaim lands taken away from local people by settlers. His comments came as his Nkonto Wesizwe or MK party, the main opposition group, marked its first year anniversary since its formation at the Moses Mabhida Stadium in Durban, KwaZulu-Natal. But critics condemn his call as racist and divisive. For more about the opposition party's anniversary and its performance so far on the South African political landscape, I reached Lamolo Ndlela. He is the spokesperson for the Nkonto Wesizwe party.
We're certainly a force to be reckoned with in the political landscape in South Africa. And, within what I'd call a politically volatile country and environment, the resounding response that we receive from South Africans is just a clear confirmation of the pulse of the country, in a sense that there was no other solution of hope for our people. And with the entrance of Nkonto Wesizwe in the landscape of the political landscape in this country, and the resounding response vote that we received, that was, by the way, we know very well, rigged. It's not a true reflection. We believe we did win the elections. Demonstrates that Nkonto Wesizwe is loved by the people. Nkonto Wesizwe is got a leader that's trusted by the people, and Nkonto Wesizwe is going to be the incoming government. Now, what have we achieved? We've achieved a lot. We have been tested by our adversaries, as you'd know, with all the trials and tribulations that we've had leading up to the elections, court cases left, right, and center that we've won. And with all of those hoops and challenges, we overcame and became the official opposition within 6 months.
Former President Zuma is urging black-led political parties in South Africa to unite under a single banner. Well, this is being taken as implying that the MK party will lead such a formation. Is this what the MK party is looking at?
Absolutely. We're saying that black parties must unite and vote as one, because without a consolidated vote, we will never be able to achieve or to dismantle this imperialistic system that we have, which has entrenched itself extremely well and continues to dominate by virtue of political parties, specifically black political parties, you know, forming their own little fiefdoms. And that's the problem. So it's been a divide and conquer strategy that has worked since day one, when this country in 1652, when our problem started, when we have Van Riebeck arrived on the Western, in the Western Cape lands.
But Ndlela, some of his critics are saying that this is a very racist and divisive call that doesn't unify the country as a whole. Your response to that?
Well, that's very funny, because I can tell you now that's probably coming from the number one racists in this country. It is for exactly that. You see, Mkhonto is a platform for all South Africans that want to see change. And you've heard me say this before, you know, that are progressing, that want to see change. But yes, the majority of the vote lies with black parties. Why is it that when we, as EFF, NK, and the ANC can come together, we don't do so? It is because there's monies that are being used to keep us separate. There's monies that are being used to infiltrate the system to ensure that we do not black vote as a black vote. We should not be scared to reflect on the fact that we're the majority, and yes, the black vote must take majority in terms of policy posture, when it's exactly the black people in this country that are suffering. It's not black, white people that stay in the townships. It's black people. Out of all the children that have been dying from snacks that have been buying in tuck shops in the township are all black. So why must we be scared to talk about the fact that, yes, indeed, it is the black people that are the most downtrodden, be reduced or deduced to racism? There's no racism with Mkhonto. We have black people, we have white people, we have Indian people, we have colored people. The people that are racist, we know who those people are. And if you just have to look at their policy posture, because they want to continue to control this economy in this country and control the land that they stole. So we can't be apologetic about the fact that, you know, we have to consolidate as black parties and then it has to be seen as racist. No, those that are thinking of racism are the ones that are racist.
Lamolo Ndlela is the spokesperson for South Africa's main opposition, Mkhonto weSizwe, or MK Party. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. South Africa's Electoral Commission, South African news media, and independent poll observers say they found no evidence of widespread rigging in the 2024 national election. Other opposition parties accepted the vote totals from the Electoral Commission. In Zambia, a newly released report shows journalists think media freedom has declined. 68% of the journalists interviewed for the report said media freedom and freedom of expression have worsened in the past year. The research was conducted by Freeborn Kibombi, a lecturer in mass communications at the University of Cavendish in Zambia, on behalf of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, or MISA. According to the findings, the major challenges facing the media include access to information, freedom of expression, and violence against journalists. Freeborn Kibombe tells me that 63% of journalists felt that the media operated freely in the most recent study. However, that is down from 73% who thought it operated freely in research done 6 months earlier.
We normally do this research every 6 months, and so we can get a perception of what the journalists actually think in terms of freedom of expression, media freedoms, and also on digital rights. So when you compare with the previous reports here, we just find that in terms of perception, the journalists, some of them were still feeling that there's a sense that in terms of media freedom, there's still more that needs to be done. And that can be proven from the report that has been done. And comparatively speaking, from the previous 6 months to this current month, yeah, there was a bit of some journalists think that there's need that the government can do actually more to express this freedom of expression in terms of the journalist approach and perception.
Dr. Kibombe, 68% of the 190 journalists that you interviewed indicate that the media freedoms have worsened in the country. What particularly were they concerned with?
The major challenge which I've actually observed, and it's in the report, is access to information. Sometimes it's very difficult to get information, and especially from the government officials, especially because they are the key stakeholders in terms of freedom of expression. And so that was the major concern about accessing information is quite difficult. And there's a question there, actually, in the questionnaire. They started dealing with the government officials. Can I get information? So most of the journalists will have the perception that it's been very difficult. And from the reports, as you can see, and the statistics, statistically speaking, it's been very difficult to actually get that information. And with the passing of the bill, I don't know if you are aware that last year, His Excellency the President had passed the into law, access to information bill, which is the ATI into law. And so there's need to actually use that and operationalize that law so that actually we can have that access to information, because the bill has been passed into law and it's almost a year now. So I think the challenge the journalists have been looking for is how can we agently operationalize this law so that at least people will be able to access that information, because it's within their right of the law that has passed in terms of access to information.
Information Minister Cornelius Muitua has often rejected criticism that the freedom of expression has deteriorated, saying that the government has actually opened its doors and actually supporting efforts of journalists to have access to information. What is your take on that?
Yes, well, some strides have been made in that regard, as you rightly quoted from the minister saying that. But when you go through the ground and you do your research and findings, you still find people are still asking. There have been certain situations, circumstances, actually, where journalists have felt harassed. And if you look at Mr. Zambia's monthly report in terms of harassment, the evidence is there that monthly they do the analysis and you find that there's a bit of harassment in every month. There's a situation which arises. And so people are still feeling that, yeah, there's need for that kind of openness, maybe a dialogue, so to speak, so that at least this access to information should not be cannot be underplayed, but at least to be listened to, and maybe a dialogue can begin between. And even my recommendation, as I said, an endeavor is very important, so that these aspects can also be brought out, so that at least that perception and aspect of freedom of expression, freedom of information, digital rights as well, can come to the fore, and people may experience that enjoyment of their freedom of expression, so to speak.
Freeborn Kibombe is a lecturer in mass communications at the University of Cavendish in Zambia. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In Tanzania, the vice chairman of CHADEMA, the main opposition party, has picked up documents to contest the chairmanship of the party. Local media reports say Tundu Lissu, the party's presidential candidate in the last election, picked up nomination forms on Tuesday, indicating his plans to lead CHADEMA. It is not clear if the current CHADEMA chairman, Freeman Mbowe, will seek re-election after nearly 20 years as head of the party. It comes as Lissu stated that he had informed CHADEMA about his plans to also compete in the presidential race to challenge President Samia Suluhu Hassan in next year's election. For analysis of the latest political development, I reach Maria Sarungi Tehai. She is a Tanzanian political activist and commentator.
Earlier this year, he was asked whether he has any ambitions within the party. He said he was happy to remain deputy chair and to rerun for his position. He seems to have changed his mind and he has decided to take up the challenge to become the chair of the party. That has been, of course, a very unprecedented move. At the same time, it has been a move that has galvanized a lot of the young people who seem to want a bit of change, even within the opposition party. They want larger changes nationally, but there seems to be a desire to have a bigger change overall, even within the opposition party. Now, what that means in terms of a more general or global point of view is that we're looking at two different personalities. Bowie has been the current chair, has been more in declined to go into negotiations. However, Tundu Lissu has always been seen as somebody who is more inclined to take on protests, strikes, and more direct confrontation in the sense of pushing back directly against CCM. His speeches also have been less reconciliatory, and he has been firm about the need of a new constitution before having any form of election in Tanzania. And that is what he has announced as part of his agenda if he gets to win.
Maria, what do you think his realistic chances of winning or defeating Mr. Mbowe, who heads the main opposition party currently?
Well, primarily, of course, if you look at it at a first glance, Freeman Mbowe has been the chair of Chadema for 20 years, meaning he probably enjoys a lot of support from some of the stalwarts of the of both Chadema and both of the political, general political scene. However, I think that he will really face a challenge with Lissu, who is among the more young members of Chadema. Of course, the overall eligible for this campaign or this election are going to be the members of the general meeting. What has to be made clear that so far, Tundu Lissu is the first one who's taken up the form. Mbowe has not personally expressed any interest in taking up the form. So we'll wait and see. The elections are expected in January. So I think that will be very interesting to look as well.
But Maria, if Tundu Lissu wins, does that even change the political dynamics in Tanzania?
Definitely. Tundu Lissu's win as chair of Chadema will definitely change the dynamics. I think that primarily it is because, as I earlier pointed out, his approach is going to be very different. He is not going to be looking for channels of discussion, not necessarily to be too combative, but I think that he will be focused more internally in reforming the party, and he will be more focused on winning the hearts and minds of the general public against the ruling party. This is a very different approach because so far CCM has had Tanzania and all political parties in a grip, in a chokehold. For example, political parties receive those who have members of parliament in the parliament, and those also who have a larger share of the votes from the previous election get some amount of subsidy. Chadema is, of course, entitled to a lot of subsidy, which I'm not sure whether your audience is aware that it was withheld under Magufuli. And then later, Samia Suluhu sort of said that she has allowed, but it's by law they're entitled to it. Now, what usually happens is such subsidies are usually withheld and handed out on whim. So that is one of the strongest chokehold that CCM has got over the rest of the political parties, because it has the government. And seated, you know, in the government means that they make most of the decisions. The other thing that has happened, of course, is the crackdown. There's been, again, a crackdown under Samia Suluhu, just like there was under Magufuli. Lately, that there's been a crackdown, there have been enforced disappearances, and many more tough reactions toward any attempt on gatherings, any attempt on protests, and so on and so forth. However, this has not necessarily meant that the Chadema members and even some members of the public were not ready to go the extra mile. But usually you find that based on how that reaction would come from CCM, there would be a reluctance on this, on the part of the current Chadema leadership to push all the way.
Maria Sarungi Sehai is a Tanzanian political activist and commentator. She spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Still in Tanzania, the presidential candidate of the main opposition Chadema party in the last election is expressing concern about alleged plots to harm him. Tundu Lissu says he is calling on the international community and top diplomats in the country to pressure the administration in Dodoma to ensure his protection. It comes after Lissu spoke with the media about a tip-off he received from a prominent cleric who had been approached by a senior security officer to warn him to beef up his personal security over an alleged plan to harm him. Lisu, a former legislator, survived an assassination attempt in 2017 when he was shot multiple times by unknown assailants. But critics say this is yet another attempt by the opposition leader to draw sympathy from Tanzanians. Tundu Lisu tells me that he does not want to go through the agony of an attempt on his life.
2 days ago, I was approached by one of their senior clerics in the country, and he told me that he'd been approached by a senior official within the intelligence and security service. And this intelligence and security official told him that he needed him to intervene to expose and put a stop to plans to harm me because of the ongoing elections within the party. So the plans are they will attack me and then they will blame it on my party chairman, who is my rival for the leadership of the party. And the reason being that the powers that be would not want me to lead the party, given the fact that political reforms, constitutional reforms have stalled in the country.
Have you since the warning beef up your security?
Well, I'm trying the best I can under the circumstances. But the truth is, there is not much I can do. I don't have an army to protect me. So if the government wouldn't do it, wouldn't give me the protection that is needed, and since the threat is coming from within security forces themselves, there is nothing I can do more than take precautions and call upon whoever is able to hear the information to put pressure to bear on the government to stop this madness.
I understand. Local media reports are saying, basically, that you are calling on the international community to put pressure on Tanzania to stop this, or you are approaching some ambassadors to talk to the government. Is this true?
That is true. That is true. I have said that I will make the information available to all the foreign diplomats based in Tanzania, and hopefully they will raise these issues through diplomatic channels with the government of Tanzania. I'll be reaching out to our friends in everywhere, basically, our friends in Europe, our friends in North America, our friends within the region, in East Africa, in Southern Africa, to make them aware of the situation. As it is, as you know, I have already been subject of a brutal attack, which I barely escaped with my life.
Some of your critics are saying this is yet again Mr. Lisu trying to draw attention to himself by creating a publicity stunt to get sympathy vote.
Well, if I needed to draw attention to my candidacy, I wouldn't need to invent a story like this. I have 16 bullet scars and dozens of scars from doctors' surgery to pull these things. I simply cannot. I cannot afford to go through what I went through. Whoever says that this is a publicity stunt is completely, you know, insensitive to the fact that I've already been subject of a dastardly assassination attempt.
Tundu Lisu is the presidential candidate of the main opposition Chadema party in the last election. He spoke with me from Tanzania commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. The government has not responded to VOA's request for comment about Lisu's allegations. Tanzanian news media quote a political official saying Lisu's claims were part of his constitutional right to speak freely and that the police would carry out their duties to provide security for all. The Chinese embassy in Kenya has begun training Kenyan journalists to diplomacy, promote professionalism and integrity. Press advocates say the initiative is ironic as China falls close to the bottom of the 2024 press freedom ranking. VOA Victoria Amunga has the details.
Kenya News anchor and reporter Alan Aoko is one of dozens of reporters and editors at the state-run Kenyan Broadcasting Corporation who recently participated in a Chinese embassy-sponsored media course. The course touched on a range of journalistic topics.
It was very critical for me to understand the kind of tools that we should be using in artificial intelligence and technology transfers and, you know, what we'll use in a daily basis as me, as a reporter, using those tools to disseminate the news. It was important to me to understand the details.
Some 70 journalists participated in the training. Speaking at the opening of the training session, the Chinese Embassy's Deputy Ambassador to Kenya, Zhang Shishong, talked about the importance of the role of journalism in a nation.
Journalists and reporters, you are the core of media and also the key factors in the success of media in conveying the information and shaping perceptions and even leading a country or nation into a correct direction.
Studies by independent journalist advocacy groups have documented how China uses such partnerships to try to foster more positive coverage, including via press junkets, sponsorship, and so-called career development opportunities to nurture better media relations. It has also offered tightly controlled press trips to Xinjiang to try to counter investigative reportings that has exposed its mass detentions and abuses in the region. As the world's leading jailer of journalists, China is considered one of the most censored countries in the world, using a combination of censorship, surveillance, and legal threats to prevent free expression. The country ranks 172 out of 180 on the Press Freedom Index, where one shows the best media environment. Alexandra Bilakowska works for Reporters Without Borders, which compiles the index.
Inside of the country, the regime is conducting full-scale campaign against any independent voices, which is also independent journalists. Within the past 10 years, because in the past we could see some space for the independent journalism in China, the investigation journalists have almost died out.
Due to limited resources, the Kenyan National Broadcaster Editor-in-Chief Simon Maina tells VOA that accepting help from China may be inevitable. But Maina says his newsroom's editorial decisions are free from China's influence.
The sponsorship they have given to us does not interfere with the editorial policy. Our editorial policy still stands. So it has nothing to do with how they operate in their country. Our standards and our editorial policies still stand.
A 2021 report by the International Federation of Journalists finds that Beijing's strategy is to target journalists in developing countries such as in Africa, where it has deep financial interests. The report further shows that three-quarters of African respondents said they viewed cooperation with Chinese entities as positive, especially where there's not enough media infrastructure. Kenyan foreign policy professor Noah Midamba says even with Beijing's efforts and investments in Africa, the continent's mass media is still aligned with the West because of the language barrier with China.
What is lagging, you know, for the Chinese is their information is not penetrating to the people in the street, the people in the rural area, and the most populous in Africa. South Africa don't understand Chinese up to now.
At the same time, what has made the headlines in Kenya's participation in China's global infrastructure and investment foreign policy project called Belt and Road Initiative, a partnership many economists say that has led the country into a debt trap. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
The former president of the Gambia Law Association has hailed as a significant boost a decision by regional leaders to establish a special tribunal to probe the country's previous military government. Local news media say it was under the leadership of Saliu Tal that the association managed to convince ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, to support the tribunal. The decision to establish the court came at the recent summit of heads of state in the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Victims of human rights violations from 1996 to 2017 under former President Yahya Jammeh have long called for the prosecution of those involved in carrying out what they say were extrajudicial killings. For more reaction and expectations, I reach attorney Saliu Tal. He is the former president of the Gambia Law Association.
First of all, the Gambian, I'm elated that the ECOWAS has approved the establishment of a hybrid court to try crimes or human rights violations that were committed between 1994 to 2017. But Peter, this whole process was actually started by the Bar Association under my presidency. So actually this was initiated by the Bar Association of Gambia in 2019. We started the conversation around the need to establish a criminal accountability mechanism and brought the stakeholders together and got the support of the government who demonstrated their political will. And we accompanied the government throughout the process. We brought world-class experts to the Gambia at no cost to government. We conducted studies on the different ways of prosecuting these kinds of crimes, together with civil society and the victims and the government of Gambia. We successfully were able to convince ECOWAS to partner with the Gambia to establish a hybrid court.
The Ministry of Justice called the decision a historic development that marks a significant step forward for the Gambia, the region, and the international community. What is your take on that?
Absolutely spot on, because frequently when we have issues with post-dictatorship or post-civil war, I mean, our former leaders or perpetrators tend to be prosecuted far away from our homelands, like in The Hague or in all these international courts, which many Africans have grown with for one reason or another. So I think the fact that we as Africans, we are able to set up institutions and prosecute perpetrators at home, I think that is historic. And it's also historic because this is the first time ECOWAS is involved in any form of transitional justice mechanism. Because as you know, in the Hissène Habré case, the AU partnered with Senegal to establish a court. But ECOWAS has never been involved. So we have to actually convince ECOWAS on the need to partner and support Gambia to establish a hybrid court.
Talking about extradition of personalities who are out of the jurisdiction and who need to be extradited to come to face justice in the Gambia, you've heard calls that former President Yahya Jammeh should be brought back. Some of his supporters are saying the court appears to be established to target the former president, who is an opponent of the current administration, and that this is just all politically motivated. What's your take on that?
I mean, that is clearly ill-conceived and baseless. Gambia had a truth-seeking process, the TRRC, that actually looked at what happened in the 22 years. And it was a process that was open, transparent, and participatory. It was televised. And everybody under the sky was invited to come and explain what happened, including perpetrators who came on TV and radio and admitted to have committed very serious human rights violations. And following the TRRC report, a white paper was produced and made recommendations. The TRRC was an independent body manned by excellent Gambians from all walks of life, from all different religions. The youth, the women, what they were on this commission. And they made recommendations. And the government overwhelmingly approved those recommendations. And in those recommendations, there was a recommendation to prosecute 70 people were mentioned as people who may have committed crimes that they should be prosecuted for. And the ex-president is one of the 70. So it is really unfortunate that some people are blinded by their sycophancy in terms of supporting an individual who has been, reports where that he has actually, caused the death of many Gambians and ECOWAS nationals.
What are your expectations of this soon to be established tribunal?
I'm privileged and honored to be involved from the conception of this idea, and also I sit as a member of the technical committee with other professionals from Gambia and the ECOWAS. And this is a very, very well-designed mechanism. that I believe will allow, will give due process rights to alleged perpetrators, would also allow victims to participate, because victims' participation is very important. And also it allows the possibility of trying perpetrators outside the Gambia in case it is for security reasons. For example, if, for example, the ex-president cannot be tried in the Gambia for security reasons, he could be tried outside the Gambia.
Saliu Tal is a former president of the Gambia Law Association. He spoke with me from the Gambian capital, Banjul. The World Health Organization and public health experts are calling for increased political commitment and funding to fighting malaria, especially in endemic regions like Africa. This week's release of the 2024 World Malaria Report by the WHO said there were 11 million more malaria cases compared with the previous year, and that Ethiopia and Nigeria recorded their highest death tolls from the disease since 2015. Yoyi Timothy Obiezu reports from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
According to Wednesday's World Malaria Report by the WHO, there were 263 million cases of the mosquito-borne disease and nearly 600,000 deaths worldwide last year. The report indicates global malaria cases grew by about 11 million compared to the year prior, while fatalities remained nearly the same. The WHO report said Africa accounted for 95% of global malaria deaths. Nigeria and Ethiopia recorded their highest levels of malaria mortalities in 7 years. Most of the victims were children under 5 years of age. Dr. Kehinde Ajayi is an expert on malaria epidemiology and control. He explains why there were setbacks.
The first thing that I accounted for this is since year 2020, most of developing countries have been resources deficit in combating malaria. Some of the resources like insecticide-treated nets and also funding towards the malaria control programs have been hampered because of the COVID-19 and the economic imbalance in developing countries.
Ajayi says climate change and declining effectiveness of anti-malaria drugs are threatening progress. Nigeria bears the world's highest burden of malaria, with more than 27% of global malaria cases and 31% of deaths. But the WHO report also showed some progress, estimating that about 2.2 billion cases of malaria and 12.7 million deaths were averted globally since the year 2000. Ajayi says increased government funding for malaria interventions could change things.
Mosquito thrives very well under the temperature that is above 19 degrees centigrade, and the climate change has made it so possible. Also, the parasite, Plasmodium parasite too, they have gained a lot of resistance against malaria drugs. Also, government needs to invest more in our health sector. Government also needs to fund research that will help us in discovering indigenous drugs.
The WHO report said only about half of the $8.7 billion target for malaria intervention last year was achieved. In Nigeria, spending on healthcare is about 4% of the national budget, much lower than the 15% agreed upon by the African Union in 2001 in the so-called Abuja Declaration. Authorities have pledged to improve spending on health. On Thursday, Nigeria signed a deal to promote local production of test kits for HIV and malaria. Abdul Mukhtar is the national coordinator of a presidential initiative aimed at transforming Nigeria's healthcare system.
We've signed two MOUs to actually set up operations locally to produce test kits for HIV, for malaria, for other STIs and other diseases at we call point of care diagnostics.
Last week, Nigeria launched its malaria vaccination campaign, becoming the latest African country to provide malaria vaccines to young children. There are now 17 countries giving new malaria vaccines. Timfi Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Korte, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, yeah. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Put up my eyes, then shut my mouth. That's good. back. We did fight, don't mean say make we break up, oh. That is to say, baby, make we no give up, oh. You did my mind anytime where I wake up, oh. Yeah. And I did beg, baby, make we make up, oh. Yeah. Take off, I cheat where you cheat, where I cheat, where you cheat back, baby, make we cancel. Take off, I cheat where you cheat, where I cheat, where you cheat back, baby, make we cancel. I don't feel like I did you wrong, that be why I didn't sing this song. Loving you is all I want, I just want to let you know, man, I miss you back.
Staying, I suppose, cause I don't know how I'm getting home. It's been so rough, couple days on the road, couple days in the same clothes. Baby, I've been so drunk, thinking about touching your body. Girl, I know that you love me, so let's try your eyes. Memories can't tell me the lie. Girl, how many times must I apologize? Yeah, kill, yeah, kill, I'm on me, yeah, kill. Let me go, go, need
back. Take off, I cheat where you cheat, where I cheat, where you cheat back. Baby, make me cancel. Take off, I cheat where you cheat, where I cheat, where you cheat back, baby, make me cancel. I don't feel like I did you wrong, that be why I didn't sing this song. Loving you is all I want, I just want to let you know, man, I miss you back. Cheat where you cheat back, baby, make we cancel. Take off, I cheat where you cheat, where I cheat, where you cheat back, baby, make we cancel. I don't feel like I did you wrong, that be why I didn't sing this song. Loving you is all I want, I just want to let you know, man, I miss you back.
You must hustle if you want job. You know, finish them or fight us. If them, they run them, no fit catch up. I know
that was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Mogwil Yabaru, say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, as long as tomorrow is unknown, never look down on anybody. Your host Peter Clotte in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.